The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome, 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 welcome one and all. Welcome to Cooking Like a Pro. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you, you listening and devoting this hour to us, chatting about food. This is Chef Cal along with the better half, Mrs. Chef.
Good evening.
All right. So we are excited about today. I did want to, wanted to chat just a bit about the podcast, because we're going to be taking a break from the podcast for a bit now that summer's upon us.
Well, not the podcast. We're taking a break from the radio, live.
So they can still get the podcast.
Yes, and we'll still be recording.
So how do they get the podcast?
Well, go to culinarilyyours.net, and you can get all of our episodes there. If you have the apps for podcasts on your phone, you can get it on Apple, on Spotify, you can find it on YouTube. But even better, if you can download any of our freebies, like the barbecue sauce cheat sheet, etc., you'll go onto our email list. And about twice a month, I send an email showing kind of a roundup of what podcasts we have sent out. So you don't have to put it on your phone.
So they can get things like the videos or the recipes. They can also find out about the cookbook release.
Yeah, and we're going to be looking for taste testers and people who can try and cook the recipes, testers like that.
One of the things with recipes is a lot of people will throw those out there in cookbook form or other form on the internet. Remember, they didn't have that back when I was doing this. So, you'd find that quite often there was just something that wasn't either not written down, probably more often than not, because it's things, you know, if you're making the same spaghetti sauce, for example, you made it your whole life, well, then you might not think that it's that important and that there's something you're doing. Maybe it's the way you're crushing your garlic or the way that you're, when you're adding your herbs, or, you know, are you letting the onions, you know, cook down to get the flavor out of them before you start adding your sauce. So a lot of it is, you know, you really have to think through these recipes. And of course, we want our recipes to be as accurate as possible.
So it's going to take a little bit of time, so we will need some recipe testers. So if you get on our email list, you already start qualifying.
Yeah, let us know. You want to test recipes? We'll send them to you. Yeah, there's a lot. You know, and these recipes, the thing about it is that the recipes that we're going to be doing in this book are way more tested than recipes in just about any other book you're going to find. And I say that because these are recipes that have been refined over decades and decades and decades. They're actually recipes that were used in so many of the different restaurants and restaurant settings, you know, that we were at. So, you know, so they're pretty well tested, about as tested as you can get. But anyway, so there's a lot of stuff there. So please don't miss out. Go to Culinarily Yours and sign up. Yeah, and we're going to be talking a little bit about barbecue, and that's actually there and on the website, as well as the grocery list. I've mentioned that before. I've got ones that's sitting here in front of me, and it's just a very, very helpful tool. In the restaurant business, we would refer to this as a job aid. Okay, it's something that that's like written, that's maybe it's laminated or it's on a wall, but you can look at it, and it just helps you be perform better in whatever your task is. So maybe it's making a particular item, maybe it's making a milkshake, you know, so you have all these, this list of how much syrup, how much milk, how much ice cream, that kind of stuff. Well, a grocery list is the same thing. It's just a helpful tool to have, because I can't tell you how many times you grabbed kind of the last of something, or you're getting a little close on something, especially if it's an obscure item. Maybe you know, you don't bake all the time and you're getting low on baking powder and you don't write it down. So the next time you get ready to do something with baking powder, you don't have any because you weren't able to write it down.
In our case, it's usually more of a high used item because we go through it so fast. If one of us forgets to write it down and the next person goes to look for it and it's gone, Who didn't write it on the list?
Yeah, well, we don't do that anymore. I mean, in this list, this grocery list has really fixed that in a lot of ways because it's just always on the fridge.
Well, it's communication.
Yeah. So there's something there, and you can just, you know, write it down there that we're almost out of, you know, Parmigiano Reggiano, and, you know, it makes its way to the list. But anyway, so I wanted to talk a little bit about teaching because it's something that's obviously been part of me and my career. I've always had restaurants, but the teaching part of it's always been an important thing. And I think that that's really what's led us on the cookbook to be kind of a, you know, an all-encompassing, you know, tool that people can use that has all that information in it. But there's a lot when it comes to teaching. There's a number of things, and we're just going to touch on them here for the next 5 minutes or so. But one of the things, and it's that one phrase, it's three words, and it's the most important thing in the kitchen. It's the most important term, let's put it this way, the most important term in cooking. And I always tell people this, and I tell people all the time. I just told people this weekend I was spending some time with, but you need to understand that. You need to back up from it and say, what is that term? And why is it so important? And what is that term, hon?
Mise en place.
Mise en place, spelled M-I-S-E, second word E-N, last word place, spelled place, pronounced place. And it's a French term for having everything together. And it's just, before you start a task in the kitchen, always think about that. And it doesn't mean that it's all the ingredients. It could be the cutting board. It could be the garbage can. Are you going to be using a knife? Then it's your knife. Or do you need a towel? Then it's your towel. And of course, your seasoning and your ingredients. And, you know, if you're opening a can, then it's your can opener. It's literally everything that you're going to need to make. And I know there's this, this little quiz that I do when I'm teaching. And it has to do with making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Now, what this has to do with is really critical thinking. You know, unfortunately, people don't, critical thinking really isn't taught like it used to be. But critical thinking, this particular, you know, quiz that I give kids is making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And just writing down how many steps to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You know, and they'll say, well, I mean, there's four. You get the peanut butter, you get the jelly, you put it on the bread. Well, no, you had to open the lid of the jelly. You had to get two knives, one for the peanut butter, one for the jelly. You had to open the little twist tie off the bread, you know. And so really think in depth about, you know, really critically think about the entire process. And if you can start, you know, developing that mindset in the kitchen, it will take you, it will help you, probably be the thing that will help you more than anything else.
Well, the key to being cooking like a pro is to be proactive, not reactive. So if you're proactively, intentionally thinking about these things and getting ahead of it, walking through the process in your mind before you even do it. And even if you are not, you know, a really strong cook, always read your recipes all the way through before you ever get started.
Yeah. Read the recipes. Make sure you have your mise en place. Make sure you have all of your ingredients, all of your tools, you know, everything that you need, you know, within arm's reach. And then you're not interrupted. You know, you're going to be more productive. You're going to certainly be, you know, quicker at it because everything's within a hand reach. You're not stopping to go grab, you know, the diced potatoes or to go grab the chili powder. I mean, everything is right there. So I think reading through the recipe, is vital. And I don't know that a whole lot of people do that. I know that I personally don't. I know you do. I don't.
Read your instructions first.
Well, obviously, I don't do instructions. Yeah, I know. When it comes to instructions, you know, I'm the typical guy. I'll make it three or four times before I'll ask my wife or my son to find me the instructions, and even then, I won't read them. But now you can Google it. But remember, not everything on the internet is right. You know. And one other thing I wanted to touch on too, and this had to do with someone that I had met this weekend. I ran into a gentleman, and this has to do with work ethic. And this young man, his name was Christian, and he reminded me that he used to work for me. And it was a long time ago, and I remember this distinct. I've actually used this numerous times in conversation, talking about this kid. This kid was 14 years old. This is my first restaurant, Dima Curios. He showed up in Reading heat, 110 degrees, wearing a suit and a tie. And I didn't care who he was, where he came from. He got the job. I mean, just that dedication to literally come to my restaurant and want to work that much. It was similar to one of the stories I tell in the cookbook about going into Maxwell's and saying, hey, chef, I wash your dishes for free if you just let me watch you cook. And it's that someone that has that kind of passion and desire that unfortunately you don't see as much as you used to. But anyway, we're going to be coming back and talking about barbecue. So if you'd like to chat about barbecue, you can always give us a call down here and talk to Ben. Our producer would be happy to take your calls at 530-605-4567. Again, 605-4567. Cooking Like a Pro. We'll be back in just a moment.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red fried potatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim frim fries with the O's and bay. Wish a fava on the side. I don't want pork chops and bacon.
For the upcoming wildfire season, REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Save 20 to 30% off at Turtle Bay's Spring Plant Sale, featuring heirloom vegetables, hard-to-find perennials, shrubs, California natives, and more. The Turtle Bay Garden Nursery specializes in drought-tolerant plants that thrive in Redding's climate, propagated on-site and ready for your home garden. The sale extends now through May 31st, located near the west entrance of the Turtle Bay Gardens at 1100 Arboretum Drive. Don't miss Turtle Bay's Spring Plant Sale. Learn more at turtlebaynursery.org.
The Ramsey Show.
You actually can help people, and you don't help them by giving them a government program. You help them by showing them the way out. People love me enough to put their arm around me and show me a different way. I didn't figure it all out in my own head. So there's a power to hope, but that's not some kind of false panacea positive thinking way. It works. You can't positive think your way into everything, but you can't negative think your way into anything.
Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Redding, save big on Black Bear Diner's new basket bundles. Get your paws on a choice of sandwich, side, and drink for only $11. Basket bundles, now available at Black Bear Diner. Join us Father's Day weekend, June 14th and 15th. It's the perfect place to celebrate and treat Dad to fun, food, and family. Black Bear Diner also added four brand new and returning classics to the menu at 2205 Hilltop Drive. Get big value and so many choices at Black Bear Diner.
Black Bear Diner.
Yes, yes, yes. Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. And what is that smell? That smell is steak. It's charred animal flesh burning on the barbecue, searing, scorching, just releasing all of those beautiful, wonderful flavors and fat and smoke.
Smoke wafting across. You can smell when the neighbors are cooking.
Yeah, yeah, that's one thing about barbecue is you're sharing it. I mean, you know, especially when we do barrel chicken. Dad did barrel chicken this weekend and he was a little worried because the fire department showed up and he thought they were coming for the, cause you can cook in a barrel, you can't burn garbage in a barrel. And, I had somebody turn, and they were actually the fire department was there for the neighbor next door. But yeah, no, it was, Dean Mercurio is on Hartnell. So someone across the street turned me in. They said, hey, they're burning in a barrel over there. And I was cooking a barrel chicken. I remember the fire department showed up and, I gave the chief a big old barbecue chicken. And yeah, they were happy. But anyway, yeah. So, but it is one of those things that you share because, one of the things I guess I should start with is when it comes to barbecue that I like is the fact that you don't have as many dishes. Right? I mean, anytime you cook on a barbecue, now sure you want to be able to, you know, treat the barbecue right and prepare it properly. You know, you want to make sure that it's burned off. When I say burned off, I mean, you know, you turn it on with like a heavy pan on top and get all whatever particles of food were cooked on it before. You want those to be turned into ash so you can scrape those off.
Okay, so if nobody's ever done that before, first, what do they need to get?
You need to sacrifice a cookie sheet, kind of a heavy cookie sheet. Something, we call them sheet pans, but something that you can put on top and allow that fire to burn right at the grill level. So it burns that off, and then you're going to want to scrape it with a scraper.
Can you use foil if you don't have a pan that you want to sacrifice, if you don't want to go buy a pan that is your sacrificial pan?
Yeah, I mean, you could, but you want something heavy. The heavier, more solid item that you use, the better. Because then you want to scrape it once that stuff's burned, and then you want to wipe it. One of the things that a lot of people don't do is they don't wipe their grill. You want to wipe it, because if not, you've got that soot on there. Because once you've burned it off and scraped it, you still got soot on your griddle, or your char grill until you wipe it off. Then after that, you spray it before you put the next food items on there, and that will keep them from sticking.
When you wipe it, do you use it? Is it a dry cloth?
I usually use a paper towel because I'm going to throw it away. If I use too many, you know, cloth towels, then my wife gets upset with me because it kind of ruins the towel, you know, when they catch on fire.
But you don't put any water on it. You don't make it moist.
No,
it's
no,
just
no.
A dry wipe.
Yeah, you don't want to cool it down because the whole purpose of getting a something charred is the fact that it needs to be the highest temperature possible. Yeah, so just, you know, wipe the soot off. You know, a metal brush for scraping, you really want a good one for that. And again, I think that I would use paper towel. And then the pan coating. And you know, you can even spray the food that you're putting on there. I mean, you can't, I don't even know that you could, it would be pretty, let's put it this way, it'd be pretty difficult to measure, pan coating in one spray. You know, you're not going to be able to put that in a measurement, but it's enough to keep it from sticking. So one of the things you need to do, you also need some tongs, maybe high temperature spatula. Remember everything that's going to be high temp, and a temperature gauge, you know, direct response thermometer. These days they have gauges that you can stick in your food and it literally will tell you on your cell phone while you're in there watching, you know, the Niners win the playoffs, or the Giants or the Edmonton Oilers win the Stanley Cup. It actually pops up on your phone and tells you what the temperature of your meat is.
Now, yeah. What type of a barbecue? Because there's so many barbecues. There's that green egg. There's a Traeger. There's your classic charbroil. There's your, what's the old Weber?
Yeah, just a grill.
Are they all treated the same? Are they prepped differently?
No, they're all treated the same and prepped differently, but they're all going to be much different quality. And that's really the key. Which one would be best? I'd say have one of each. You know, because you never know. I mean, if I want to smoke something, then I'm going to need a Traeger. I'm going to need something that's going to capture, the smoke that's in the air and so it gets, you know, infiltrated into the protein, or it could be vegetable for that matter, but into whatever it is you're cooking. Char grill, you know, you don't need that. You don't need it that much. But a flat grill and an egg. Think about it, the egg barbecues is they're so, heavy that nothing's going to get out of them. And when you cook with something like that, when the smoke is locked in, that's when you get more smoke. That's when you cut into something and you get that pink hue around it. That's the smoke infiltrating in. And then after that, you really want to, well, there actually is one other thing that I'll mention. And if you have flare ups, that's a good thing to do is if you have flare ups, have a squirt bottle. Just a squirt bottle of water. You can use vinegar. But when you get a flare up, remember anything that has fat, or if it has fat, as in oil in the marinade and you're marinating something, you're going to get those flare ups, and the flare ups are going to give you soot. So you're going to want to knock those down as soon as they come up. So just a squirt bottle with, you know, water or vinegar in it. Either one of those would work. Again, you can, and vinegar is actually even a little better because it kind of spritzes a little flavor on there. Yeah.
No, because usually in a kitchen, you don't want to throw water on a fire.
Not on oil. Yeah, not on grease. Yeah.
That's where you're going to use baking soda. But out on the barbecue, it's a different situation. You get a flare-up.
Yeah, you're just knocking it down. You're not trying to put a fire. Well, you are technically, I guess, trying to put it out. But you want, just want to calm it down. If something flares up, you got to give it a shot. And that comes back to the original bars. You just don't want to cook clean the top of your barbecue. You want to clean underneath it, too. Generally, that's where most fires are. Most fires flare up down underneath after several cookings on a barbecue, and all those things drip down there and fall down. You got particles of this and grease and grime, whatever else is down there. Then that grease can catch on fire, and now you've got more fire than actual flame. You know, you want the flames coming out of your burner, your gas. You don't want to have or charcoal, whatever you're using, but you don't want it just out of control burning going on.
So a charcoal versus a gas grill. You're going to be taking your grates off, mm-hmm. and getting down there and getting any debris scraped out, scooped out.
Yeah.
Now, a gas barbecue is going to be a little cleaner burn than a charcoal, correct? Because you're not going to have all of the charcoal left over.
Yeah, exactly, because you're going to have all the ash from that. So you shouldn't have as much ash, but there's always going to be a cover plate over top of the burners themselves, which keeps the burners. It does two things. One is it keeps direct heat from going straight up. You want your heat on a barbecue to be spread out a little bit, because if you've got these rows of gas piping under there with, and the flames are coming out, intermittently, maybe every 3 inches, well, then it's only going to cook there. So you have to spread that out. So they have, it's like a reflector pan that goes on top of that. So that needs to be cleaned, and then whatever falls down underneath needs to be cleaned. I always take my barbecue and take it apart, and then I put aluminum foil on the bottom once I've cleaned it. And then that way, the next time I use it, I just have to pull the foil off and throw the foil away. I don't have to scrub the whole thing again. And then I just put new foil down. And that works good for your oven, too, or even for your stovetop.
Just to line it.
Yeah, now, just to line it with some foil.
So a lot of barbecues, I think I remember the Weber's had that opening, the ventilation. Do you need to make sure that that's...
Yeah, because, fire needs oxygen in order to burn. So when you're first starting up a barbecue, you want oxygen in there because it needs to be able to burn. But then after that, you want to close that down, because if you keep your vents wide open, the chances are your food's going to just cook too fast. And that could be a problem too. It's because, matter of fact, sometimes in this case of charcoal, your charcoal will turn to ash and soot before your food's done. So you do have to kind of back off a little bit on the air. But the air learning, you really practice, that's what's going to make perfect. All barbecues are designed to, similar, but then also with their little different, different thoughts on how they work. And then when it comes to the actual cooking of the food, then just figure out, the process of you seasoned it, you put it on the barbecue to cook, and then you just kind of keep an eye on the temperature. Remember rare being around 120, 125, and those are finished temperatures. Remember, you still have 5 to 10 minutes of carryover cooking, and carryover cooking, will depend on how fast, you're cooking it. If you're cooking it at super high heat, if I pull something out of the oven, out of a 300 degree oven and set it on the counter, it's going to rest and maybe it's ready to cut as a roast in maybe 4 or 5 minutes. If I pull something out of a 500 degree oven that has all that activity going on inside of it because of the heat and the friction that's caused by the heat, then it's got to rest longer, because if I don't, I cut it and there goes all the juice. So again, unless you're going to eat your cutting board or lick your cutting board, get the flavor off of it.
So what are those beef temps again?
So 125 to 160 is kind of goes from rare to well done. So usually you want 120, 125, medium rare, be right around 130, 135, medium 135, 140. You start getting into medium well around 145, 150, and then once you get up into the 155, 160, there's pretty much no more. It doesn't necessarily mean it's dry, but there's definitely no liquid, no natural juice, which is the blood of the animal that's gone. So, it can be easily be dry, I suppose, at that point. But so anyway, just pull it off 5 or 10 degrees beforehand, and check the doneness, use a temperature. I would also always touch it. Get used to touching it, because at some point you may not have a temperature gauge and you're going to need to touch it. I can tell by, you know, touching the, basically you're looking at the firmness of your chicken breast that's on there, or the firmness of your steak, or the firmness of a roast, and because how much give it has. Because when it's rare, it's going to be, you know, real soft, real, a little more sloppy. And then as it firms up and gets towards well done, it becomes, you know, firmer and firmer to the touch.
So. Now, where should you place things on a grill? Over the, right over the heat or off to the side?
Well, you know, all grills have, and so do griddles too, just, you know, flat cooking. They have what we call hot spots. So they have a place on there, don't ask me why, it's just the way they are, where they have these certain spots that cook faster than others. So just learn where those are, and maybe that's where you start your meat. And then maybe you pull it off to a side or a spot that's a little bit cooler. I wouldn't have my whole barbecue on high anyway. I would be cooking on one on a high spot to be able to sear it, and then moving it, allowing it to kind of slow down and rest, maybe on a slower side where it's, where maybe the burners aren't even on. You know, maybe move, you're cooking on the left side, then move it over to the right. Maybe the right side's not even on.
So that would be starting it on direct heat and finishing on indirect heat.
It's still direct heat, but it's, you know, I mean, if it's off, then it isn't direct heat. Yeah. So I guess it would be, you know, finishing it still over the same char grill, but the, you know, the heat not being on. So anyway, so, but, and again, everything you want to know about barbecue that we've been talking about, including a whole bunch of great recipes that, that we put together with raspberry barbecue sauce and ginger barbecue sauce and peach barbecue sauce, fennel barbecue sauce, tequila, any, there's more, Carolina mustard barbecue sauce, all kinds of them. And this is all free information. So, they can go straight to Culinarily Yours and you can download all this information for free and more. And, so please do that. Please do that. And we're going to take another quick break here at the bottom of the hour, and we will be back in just a moment at Cooking Like a Pro.
Dignity Health and Reading West Rotary present the 18th Annual Taste of Reading 2025, Sunday, June 8th from noon until 4 at the Reading City Hall Sculpture Park. Chefs are preparing their finest foods for you to sample with great wines and microbrews, plus live entertainment on three stages. Get your tickets for food and drink sampling in advance at tasteofreading.org.
Experience glowing wild and illuminated Wildlife Lantern Festival at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay Exploration Park in Redding, California. Open select nights April 4th through June 8th, 7 to 10 p.m. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with Asian lanterns inspired by plants and animals from around the world. Plus food, drinks, live performances on select nights, and much more. Don't miss Turtle Bay's Glowing Wild Lantern Festival at the Sundial Bridge. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
You remember when quality mattered more and people advertised low prices? When craftsmanship wasn't just a buzzword, but a way of life. At Cascade Curations, they never forgot. Their hand-selected collections honor that American tradition and the quality you grew up with. Quality clothing and low prices, just like they used to make them. Come see their showroom of men's and women's clothing across from Jack's Grill on California Street. And as always, they have free parking for their customers. Go by and see for yourself. Cascade Curations.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. We'd like to just take another moment to personally thank Charlu, Kathy, and the whole Charlu's family at Charlu's Tap House for sponsoring Cooking Like a Pro podcast. And again, you can get the podcast at Cooking Like a Pro, even if you can't get us on the radio show. And also all the shows are archived there as well. But Charlieu's located in the Gateway Shopping Center, just 10 miles south of town, a family-run restaurant with just the best homemade pizza, pasta, and crisp salad you'll find. Also making fresh homemade Italian gelato in a relaxing, unhurried family atmosphere. And they got the unique beer wall. Don't forget to try the frosty ales, IPAs, and the crisp ciders there. And also sign up for the rewards program. You get instant rewards. And then they have the wonderful, wonderful Charlieu's Adventure Bounce House, Adventure Room. I can think of all the Charlieu's Adventure Room. Go down there. I tell you, the best place to take your children if you got a birthday coming up. They take care of all the work, and they'll even go ahead and have Charlieu's will even show them how to make their own pizza. So Charlieu's. So go to charlieu's.com again. Tell them Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef personally sent you. So I wanted to talk a little bit about lobster. And the reason I wanted to talk about this is because one of the things I found over the years, and definitely this is true for me, but I believe that most people will go out to a restaurant and to eat foods and order foods that they wouldn't normally make at home. And the more expensive ones are the ones that kind of fall into that category, you know, and lobster happens to be one of those. It's one of those things that if you're going to pay, you know, $30 a pound or more for something, and take it home and screw it up, well, you know, maybe you'd go out and you'd have someone else cook it for you that should know what they're doing. But anyway, it's not difficult to do. Most of everything I've ever seen online has been wrong, according to how I would do it, because it's really not that difficult, but you do need to take specific steps. One of the things is the lobster, unless you're doing a lobster that's poached in let's say butter, you know, so something that's really succulent, or maybe, I don't think I'd poach it in anything else because you want it to taste like lobster. So why would you get a poaching liquid and pull that flavor out? You know, if I poach a lobster in a little bit of broth and then I take that lobster out to eat it and that broth tastes like lobster, then there's been this flavor transfer. So the lobster's not going to have as much flavor as before. A lot of that has to do with also thawing out under refrigeration. But really you just take the lobster. You can get whole lobsters, live lobsters. When lobsters are killed, that they can gain a lot of bacteria. So I always get my lobsters frozen. Either they're alive or they're frozen. Okay. Cause if they're frozen, you know, there's, you know, the freezer isn't a hospital, but if they're in the freezer, then they've been processed and frozen rather quickly. So, you know, that's generally the best thing to do, but you know, people like eating lobster from the East Coast, which is a completely different type of lobster. It's not nearly as firm. And remember, the firmer the seafood, and then we're talking shellfish, we're talking crustaceans, mollusks, we're talking seafood, finfish, the colder the water, the better. It's always the colder the water, the better. The colder the water that the animal, the fish in this case, is raised in, the firmer the flesh is going to be. So you really want, so that's why when I get lobster, I'll always shoot for something, you know, down in Australia, New Zealand. Lobster, both of those, that's cold water down there. I don't eat lobster from, in fact, I don't know that I eat any shellfish from the Gulf of America, the old Gulf of Mexico, now the Gulf of America. I don't know, maybe it's better now that it's called America. I don't know, but the temperature of the water's, quite a few degrees warmer. So, you know, you can have a challenge, but most of that, if it's raised and harvested and treated properly and kept on ice, you're not going to have any trouble.
Now, so I have seen, you know, Costco would have a warm water version and a cold water version. If they don't have a cold water version in stock, which they sometimes do, mm-hmm. would you go with the warm water version or just go somewhere else?
I would probably just not. I'd probably get something other than lobster. I mean, I think that, yes, it's fine. And, again, maybe it depends on, you know, I guess a little bit what you're going to use it for. We used to have a lobster risotto at one of my restaurants. It was just amazing. Or maybe it's lobster that you're going to cut up in pieces and even put it in some kind of a bouillabaisse for a French recipe, or like an Italian. It's kind of a bouillabaisse is the French version of what the Italians call cioppino. Now you wouldn't normally put lobster. Well, you can put any shellfish in cioppino. In fact, you can put anything that fit in a pot in cioppino, but cioppino is kind of a poor man's seafood stew. I remember Dad talking about the different stories they'd have of the ships coming in, because our family was raised around the San Francisco area for a long time, and many of the De Mercurios were fishermen, and they would come in, and they'd have, you know, somebody would have some shrimp, and somebody would have some fish, and somebody might have some crab, and they would trade, you know, on the dock, and then they would make this seafood stew, which became cioppino, or their version of cioppino. But that was something that you can do also.
But these days, $40 a pound, we're going to...
You don't want to screw it up, yeah.
We're going to take some time with it. Okay, let's say you went and bought some frozen lobsters.
Okay.
Okay, what are all the steps from the shop to the...
So we're
going to
walk through this here, and I need to do a video on this. People would be interested in that. But you're going to take we just have the lobster tail. And you take the tail, and with the rounded part facing up, the little flippers, the little feet are on the bottom.
Well, first up, we have to defrost it. How do you defrost it?
Overnight.
In the fridge.
Yeah, thaw it out in the fridge overnight. Not in running water, just, you want to leave all that flavor in there, especially on something that's super mild, like abalone or lobster or veal, these things, foie gras, things that are very distinct in their taste, but they're mild in the grand scheme of, you know, the abundance of it. So you don't want to lose any of that. So you've got this thawed out lobster, and you're going to take the tail, and I'm right-handed, so the tail is going to go to my left, and I'm going to take a knife, a chef's knife, and I'm going to insert it right above the tail, right where the meat goes into the flange, where the tail flange is out. Then I'm going to cut about a half inch down. I'm going to crack through the shell, but only go a half inch down. Because then I'm going to open up, remove the knife, open up that shell, pull the lobster meat out. I'm going to get all that tail meat out. I'm going to take the shell, remove the lobster meat, take the shell, flip the shell upside down. And here's where people make the mistake. Flip the shell upside down, maybe crack it a couple times. And now what you've actually given yourself is this little shelf for your lobster to roast on, so it's not roasting boiling in the water, because you want a moist cook, right? So you wanted it with a little bit of moisture in there, but you don't want it cooking in a broth. So it sits up on top of the shell for direct heat. And I always go hot. Hotter the better. 500 degrees for 7 to 8 minutes. And it's always, of course, it's going to depend on a lot of things. How hot your oven is, if it's calibrated correctly, how big the lobster is, all these different things. But you want it to be, it will turn red. The shell will turn bright red, and you will, and the meat will become real firm. It won't be, what's the word? Oblique or
opaque?
Yeah, it will no longer have that translucent look to it. It will be completely solid, white like a cloud. And you know, I'll usually spread a little butter on it before I cook it. Sometimes a little paprika.
Now, is there a trick for getting the meat out of the shell all in one piece, or is it going to break apart? How hard is that?
Yeah, it should be pretty simple to do, if as long as the knife is cutting all the way down. You got to crack that shell all the way to the very end of the tail, because you, again, at $40 a pound or whatever the cost is, you want to get all the meat out of there you can. And then basically you just butterfly it. So you take the lobster out, butterfly it. There'll be one intestine going through the entire tail. You just pull that off, pull it out. If the lobster was fasting, or maybe it was in a place where it wasn't getting any food before it was harvested, you might not be able to see that. If the lobster was in a place where it was eating a bunch of kelp or something like that, you might have a big green, you know, piece there. You know, we are what we eat. So if a lobster is, you know, in a bed where it's eating a particular item, that item can also affect the color of the lobster and even a little bit of the flavor, because the lobster is taking it in as its substance. So, but then just roast it until it's just cooked, serve with drawn butter. I don't know that, I'd even do lemon. I think if you have lemon for lobster, then maybe you're using it to clean your fingers or something. But, you know, lobster is perfect right by itself. You know, you really want to do it right. You want, again, cook it fast, lock in all that flavor. One of the things that we used to do also is you could flavor the butter. You know, if you get lobster shells or if you got a lobster body, you can crack that up with butter and just let that kind of simmer. And we used to put a little bit of saffron in our butter, and then we would strain that butter, and you'd have this clear, real amber-colored clarified butter. So all the milk solids and the salt and all that was removed. But the butter itself had flavor from the lobster. And it was decadent. I mean, you could, though you drink it because you feel your arteries harden while you're doing it. But if you're going to do lobster, yeah, you definitely want to make sure that you're taking your time, you're doing it right, roasting it in an oven in a shallow pan, and the meat itself should not be touching the liquid at all.
When you pull the meat out, is the kind of the inside body of the meat facing down? Is it the backside up? How do you turn the meat on the shell?
You pull it all the way out. Go ahead and remove the tail from the shell completely. Then you're going to take the shell, turn the shell upside down.
So the back of it is up.
Yeah. Well, the belly side. The belly side is facing up.
Oh, the belly
and
side.
And then you're going to lay this lobster right back over the top of it. And then that's going to keep it back out of the out of any liquid, so it doesn't boil. So because you really want a lobster to be roasted.
Now, what do you serve with lobster? It is so rich and so decadent. It's got to be something, maybe something acidic, something plain.
Yeah, I'd probably go with maybe something acidic, but something, you know, like couscous, some kind of a grain would be a nice choice. You know, generally with seafood and shellfish, you generally wouldn't go with with potatoes or even pasta, for that matter. I mean, you could do anything you want. When we did the lobster risotto, the lobster was cooked right in the rice. And it was a lobster sherry cream sauce, and that was just a highly popular dish. But for that, you could use little pieces of lobster. You wouldn't need to get the money for the whole tail. So you could buy the whole lobster and clean out the claws, and there's a little bit of body meat in there as well, but not a lot.
Yeah, did you do like a lemon orzo, something on the side?
Yeah, lemon orzo would be great. You know, and then if you get any eggs in there, those eggs turn bright red when you cook them, and those are great to add to your product as well. If you're going to add those to something, they add a lot of flavor. It's kind of basically it's the caviar of the lobster. So we're going to take our last break here at Cooking Like a Pro. We appreciate you listening, and again, you're going to be able to find us continuously on Culinarily Yours. The podcast will be there, plus all the freebies and everything. And we appreciate you listening, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Oh, this is the night. It's a beautiful night, and we call it a Valentine. Look at the skies. They have
stars. KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Reading.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6:05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
I'm Dr. Lauren Strickland, and I'm honored to bring world-class breast cancer care right here to Reading at Valor Oncology. With expertise in advanced surgical techniques, including skin-sparing and nipple-sparing mastectomies, oncoplastic surgery, and hidden scar techniques, I focus on achieving the best possible medical and cosmetic outcomes for my patients. I also specialize in benign and malignant disorders of the breast and high-risk screening and genetic counseling, helping women to make informed decisions about their health. At Valor Oncology, you won't see a rotating door of doctors. You'll see the same expert team who truly knows your history and walks with you through every step of your journey. Your care is personal to us because we are part of this community just like you. If you or a loved one needs breast cancer treatment, ask your doctor to refer you to Valor Oncology because you deserve the best. Call 530-900-4000 or visit valor.org to schedule a consultation. Valor Oncology, rooted in Reading, focused on you.
Hello, food fans. Chef Cal here, inviting you to come gather around the table with us tonight at 5 p.m. for an exciting time of sharing timing tricks and tempting morsels of culinary insights to help you expand your home meal menus and impress your family and friends. We've got flavor, food, and culinary facts right here on Cooking Like a Pro on KCNR Radio.
Morning out in the garden, get your ripe ones.
Welcome back to our final little segment here. Anyway, this has really been fun. I've enjoyed this the last year we've been doing this. And again, we'll continue to do it, but you'll be able to find us on Culinarily Yours. And we have, we're almost a year, so that'd be 52 weeks. So gotta be somewhere in the, by the time we get done, maybe 47, 48 episodes.
Yeah, we'll be in the 40s.
So yeah, and those are all archived. You can hear those actually without the commercials. So you can, again, go to Culinarily Yours, and we are also available for, you know, questions and stuff. You can always, there's a place in there where you can click, Cooking Like a Pro Podcast, .net and send us a question. I love questions. Yeah, we'll get back to you on that. So one of the things that we really are putting a lot of time and effort into now is trying to collect, the cookbook, the story of...
Your mic's not on.
Oh. Yeah, there, is my mic on now? Okay. All right, something get pulled. Okay.
It's on the whole time.
Are we on now?
I'm not sure. We lost ears. We can't hear.
Wait a minute. Hey, as long as they can hear us, so...
There wasn't anything on my end over here, so something over there had to be pulled.
Okay.
All right. Well, if you guys can hear us, then great. Let's keep going.
You can. Can you hear us over there, Ben?
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Then. Well, anyway, so for some reason, we lost the show in our headphones. But you know, hey, it's the first technical error we've had, and it happened on the last show. So there you
last
go.
Segment of the last and show.
This one here got yanked a bit. But anyway, so when I look back at my cooking career and where it started, it really began coming home when I was very young and having, all these little notes from my mother on the refrigerator, little post-it notes on there. So it's kind of where it started from there. And then I even mentioned this earlier when I was in a high school, I started going to culinary programs back then they called them chef's foods. And I remember going up to Chef, Bruce Brown and asked him again if I could, you know, wash his dishes for free just because I wanted to watch him cook. I think that, you know, my fascination with it was just really because everyone in the family cooked. And I think my heart towards, having, you know, family and connection and all the important things that food literally brings to the table and brings to the forefront and helps in our lives to enrich our lives, really comes from around the table. And I think that I seen that at an early age, and that was just the direction I wanted to go. But, we opened up DiMercurio's restaurant, me and my family in 1989. We were open until 2006. During the middle of that time, we had opened up a few other restaurants, Pesce Pasta. Honey, remember old school? What was your favorite thing about old school? Was it a menu item? Was it the, I loved the location.
Well, I love the history of it because that is where my family went to school back in the day. That was where my mom and my aunt and my uncle went to grade school.
A lot of history in that
building.
And now my son and his wife, Joshua and April, have a restaurant there called Cheesecake. So go down and see them and tell them we said hello. I always competed. I don't know why. I started competing before competing was even available. I was just doing it on my own and traveling. And I remember traveling over to the Reno once to doing a competition. And this is, I was just teaching myself. I didn't know what to do. And I was with my mom and my grandma. And I remember that was a fun trip. And they drove me over there so I could compete. And we had a lot of fun together, a lot of memories, a lot of camaraderie also when you get chefs together. So that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed the competition, and the competition just continued to grow and grow. And I got a chance to meet and work with just amazing chefs throughout my life, throughout my career over the decades. And there was just a ton of things to embrace. And again, I think that you're, when you do these events in the kitchen, whether the kitchen at home or in a restaurant setting or somewhere else, like a wedding or something, the food is always a real important factor because food kind of brings people together. I remember at DiMercurio's, I'd see countless times, I'd see a couple come in and they just sit there staring at each other until food showed up. you know, that's why Dad said, make sure that you always get plenty of food. So we'd have the soup, and then they'd get the salad. And this is way before they ever had a la carte. A la carte wasn't even a word back then. When we first started, you got a lot of courses. Everything was in, you got your starch. You didn't have to pay extra for vegetables, and you got bread and whipped garlic butter. And but once the bread and the butter would get on the table right away, then they'd start talking, and then they'd, you know, they'd start, you know, like my mom does. Mom always butters Dad's bread, and it started the conversation. So that was just something that was a passion of mine. And then having the opportunity to go to the World Cooking Olympics in 96 for the first time. And see, we won an Olympic gold medal. There were 5 gold medals in the world that year. We were the only regional gold medal in the United States, and 5th in the world. And it's a 4-person team. So I actually talked to one of my teammates the other day, Joe Arati. He's down in San Diego. Norma is somewhere teaching, I think, in Los Angeles. And I'm not sure where the other guy is, John. It was 30 years ago almost. So don't always keep track. But anyway, so doing that and then taking over the team and running the team for the next number of years, again, all the way we competed in 2000 and also 2004. And the biggest part of going back and forth to Europe was teaching other kids, you know, passing on that story, passing on the skill, passing on the discipline, passing on those things that were passed on to us, you know. And I think that's a big thing. I don't know, what's your, when it came to family meals, what are some of the times of the year where you guys would do big family meals?
Birthdays would be a big one. Because Memorial Day weekends, because my birthday is right now. Mm-hmm. We would do big barbecues. We would go up to Hat Creek. It was grilled chicken and potato salad and baked beans, things like that. Things that are just memories, and then special cakes that were made.
You said to Dad, your dad always made breakfast on Sundays. Was it always Sundays that he'd make breakfast?
Usually Saturday mornings.
Saturday mornings. Okay. But yeah, it's family time together. So my life ended up going through all these variety of different restaurants and different places that I worked and different opportunities I had to work in different areas of hospitality, whether it was back of the house, front of the house. I ran a university for a couple of years and a restaurant chain for a couple of years and learning about marketing and distribution. I think if I was to do it again, probably one of the things that I really enjoy a lot now is food photography. But I think that I would have had to have gone through a lot of what I did in order to be able to enjoy it the way that I am, because of the level of getting to an international height of being able to know as much as you can about food and seeing. I mean, I go to a doctor's office and they don't really put magazines in there anymore, but I just sit there and look at the covers and I'm like, okay, what would I change on that? What would I change on that?
Styling.
Not that what's on there is necessarily wrong, but what else could be done? You know, to maybe tweak it a little bit. And I think when you're doing that, you're doing that same kind of mindset of critically thinking at home. Whether you're home making a lobster or you're barbecuing out in the backyard. Another thing that meant a lot to me was the touching tables. And I don't know if I coined that term. I'd never heard it before, but I've always used it. And that's going out in the dining room and literally going to every table and talking to people. And I remember in Dean McCurry, so many stories, and these stories are throughout the book that we're writing. But I remember we had a couple that came up from a town outside of Reading. It was actually a town called Cottonwood. And I went out in the dining room and I said, hey, how you folks doing? You celebrating anything? It's kind of it's a pretty safe question to ask when you have an elevated restaurant. And they had a yard sale to raise money to come to my restaurant for their first wedding anniversary. You know, and you can't put a price on that. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've found that it was a young couple, and he was going off to war. You know, they didn't pay for their dinner. I mean, that was an honor for me to know that they were spending that time, that last night together, by coming out and enjoying themselves at my place. And, you know, I know that I had a gentleman who came, and him with his whole family, and I had asked him, you know, why he was, you know, if he was celebrating anything. He said no. He goes, you're my wife's favorite chef, and then she died this morning, and the family just wanted to come out. It was a big family thing that they showed up. And so those are the kind of things, I think, that make the connection. And I think that that's really what food does. Food makes a connection unlike anything else. And I think that the more we can embrace that, the more we can get back into relationships and communication and all the things that really make life worth living, right? I mean, if, you know, I mean, as people of faith, me and Krista, I mean, if God needs to be at the center of our lives, and we pray he's at the center of yours, but, you know, we have all of these opportunities to be blessed. Are we taking those? Are we getting together? Like our family, we get together all the time. Because we get together so we can spend time together. And what do you do during those time? You create memories. And once you create those memories, they're with you forever. So anyway, we appreciate you so much listening to us this over this last year or so. Cooking Like a Pro, again, you'll be able to find us on Culinarily Yours.
Yeah, and even though we're not live on Wednesday nights, we will still continue to do the podcast. We will still be giving you the information.
Yeah.
So sign up for any of those freebies on the website, and you'll be on our email list to get those podcasts.